Hey everyone, this is Ashley Menzies Babatunde, your host and resident storyteller, and welcome to another episode of No Straight Path, the highs, the lows, and the lessons learned. No Straight Path is brought to you by the HubSpot Podcast Network, the audio destination for business professionals. We are digging into the human stories behind success, and my hope, as always, is that you leave the conversation inspired, motivated, and excited about your journey.
I've been told this by a mentor, and I also like rephrase their words. Someone who hasn't been where you're trying to go can't give you directions for how to get there. Yeah. And I just actually just made that one up on the spot. I'm going to try to say it again. I like it. Someone who hasn't been where you are trying to go cannot give you directions for how to get there. Now, they can teach you how to drive. They can tell you 10 and 2, follow the speed limit. You know, like, you know, only pass on the left side. Like, they can still guide you. They can still give you advice. I'm not saying you shouldn't listen to someone who hasn't done exactly what you want to do. But in terms of the exact steps for how to get there, they're only going to be able to take you as far as they went on that exact journey.
Hey friends, hey, I hope you are well. I hope you enjoyed part one of my conversation with Dr. Fermi Okunlami. This conversation had such a profound impact on my thinking. And in part two, Fermi offers so many gems of wisdom, from turning your passions into your professions to drafting a life mission statement aimed at helping you make the impact that you want to make in the world. But before we get to Fermi's meaningful advice, I wanted to delve deeper into his story. He shared the various challenges he experienced throughout his journey and his advocacy for mental health, but I was curious about his own mental health, his mental state, and he took me back to the accident.
I'd say that immediately afterwards, many people expected that I would be depressed, right? I went from All-American athlete, orthopedic surgery resident, to in a hospital bed, unable to manage my own bowel and bladder, unable to roll myself from side to side, unable to then put food to my own mouth. And I think many people thought, how can you keep on living? How can you keep being positive? Now, I don't take personal credit for this at all, right? Because I don't feel like I did anything to feel the way I felt. And in fact, I had my roommate in rehab, almost exact same age. He was married, had a similar injury, same level. Our sort of impacts were the same at that point. And he busted his butt just as hard as he could in therapy, just like I did. And I regained function and he did not. That had nothing to do with me doing something better than he did, right? And he, once again, would be perfectly fine with me disclosing this. He was very down. And, you know, his relationship fell apart. He and his wife got a divorce. He talked about suicide. He didn't see the point in going on because he was not able to do the things that he thought he was going to do in his life. I do not feel like I did anything to not have that mindset, but I just know that I never had that mindset for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. And people would come visit me and would be coming to my room to talk. And, you know, after 15 minutes, they would be crying because they're talking about what struggles they have in their life. And they're like, well, wait, I'm supposed to be here to support you. And I'd be like, I'm fine. Like, I'm not going anywhere. So you can sit and talk as much as you want. But I was in a mental space that was fine. And I think that actually scared many of my close friends and family, because they're like, it's not processed yet. He's not really letting this hit him yet. And this is going to be the day where it's all going to come down. He's going to realize it. But right now he's either masking it, or he's trying to hide it, or he hasn't let it sink in. But no, I never felt down. I never asked, like, why me? I never was depressed. But I want to be clear that I don't think that I'm better than anyone for that reason. Mm-hmm. I don't think that I did anything different. It's just that every one of us, as I said, is on this continuum. So depression is not just sadness, because you can have everything in your life that seems to be going great and be depressed, right? Depression is it's a diagnosis, right? It is not just a state of being. And so for whatever reason, while I did have many reasons why someone could think I would be depressed, I wasn't depressed. And I tried to sort of talk to my friends and patients about that, because they then feel down about themselves when they see good things happening in their world, yet they still feel down, right? And they say, well, why? I don't have any right to be depressed. Look at all these amazing things. yet they still just don't feel happy or positive. They feel hopeless and helpless and worthless. And so I think that that's an important thing to recognize. But to be direct in answering your question, I mean, my mental state at that point, sure, I was grappling with what the future is going to be. I had lots of questions as to what access I would now be given myself. What am I going to do? Am I going to be able to stay being a doctor? Like, well, but it was never a woe is me. This is the end of the world. This is the worst thing that could ever happen. I actually, and maybe I would say this more clearly now than I would have said it that day, but I know that the Lord has a plan for every single one of us. And at that time, I was just thinking, God, I don't know what your plan is, but you must have something in store because I wouldn't have asked for this. This is not what I would have asked for, but I will stay faithful. And seeing where I am now, almost 11 years from that time, some would think that it was written, that it was supposed to be that way. Like the work that I do now in disability almost seems as though that was supposed to be part of my journey. Because one, I don't know if I would be doing this work without that. And two, I don't know if I would have seen this community without that. And if I were in this work without having that injury myself, I don't know that I would have been able to have the same level of impact, because I do think that there's a certain lived experience that helps to inform the work. I'm careful when I say this because I'm not saying that you have to be disabled to then be in this work, but I do think that it provided me with a perspective that has allowed me to have the opportunities that I have now. I don't take credit for that being the countenance that I had, but at no point was my mental health or anything that was of concern to me.
Yeah. You know what I love about your story? I feel like you just dispel a lot of assumptions about things, and you show that as humans that we aren't monoliths in whatever identity we may occupy. You know, I think it's interesting how society has had certain expectations of how you might feel or how things might be for various points in your life. But you're like, no, actually, it wasn't really like this. And let me tell you how it really was. And I think that's going to be extremely helpful for broadening people's perspectives. And you talked about just saying, God, I don't know what's next, but I know you got a plan, and his plan was great. It is great, and it is continuing to be great. And so I want to pivot to your career. I want to pivot to the entrepreneurial mindset that you have. Talk to us about that, because you're someone who has given me some of the best career advice. I think you're so wise. And so I want to talk about where that comes from.
Yeah. So first, I've been very, very fortunate to have sponsors, mentors that have helped me sort of along my journey. But to give the snapshot of the career and then to get into some of the detail. So did the orthopedic surgery residency, had the accident, went back to Indiana where my family has lived since. And I wanted to do something to continue stimulating my mind as I was doing my rehab. So at that point, I was doing outpatient rehab. And I was in my third year of orthopedic surgery residency, but was not able to be a resident right then at that time. So I ended up getting a master's from Notre Dame in engineering, science, and technology entrepreneurship. And so that degree is what I give credit to the way that I now think about problems. I'd say that I saw problems before and, you know, it's like, man, that's too bad, right? There's a problem there. But now when I think about a problem, I almost automatically think about, all right, what can we do? What thing can we create? How can we get around it? So I no longer saw problems as a barrier, right? I just saw problems as something to then to solve in a way. And that was where the entrepreneurial sort of mind kicked in. Now, during that master's, I actually did return to residency. So I finished a family medicine residency in South Bend, Indiana, before then coming to the University of Michigan, where I took my first faculty appointment as an assistant professor of family medicine and physical medicine and rehabilitation. So I tell people that as a family physician, I took care of cradle to grave. So I delivered babies, took care of kids, adults, and even worked in the nursing home, right? So anything that you can imagine in that spectrum of humanity was what I did as a primary care doctor, who was bringing my orthopedic background into it, because then musculoskeletal care is a large part of that. So anyway, finished the residency, took a faculty appointment. But when I started, I also started as the director of medical student programs in the Office for Health Equity and Inclusion. So that is where sort of my passion for access and equity was able to be baked into my role as supporting sort of diversity for the medical school. Now, I've taken multiple sort of different paths along that journey. And now I'm an assistant professor of family medicine, physical medicine and rehabilitation, urology, and orthopedic surgery here at Michigan Medicine. And I'm also an adjunct assistant professor of orthopedic surgery at UCLA. But then the primary sort of title I have at the University of Michigan is I'm the director of what's called Student Accessibility and Accommodation Services, which is really just a long title to say disability services. So I run disability services for the over 50,000 students that we have here at the University of Michigan, which is made up of our Services for Students with Disabilities office, our two testing accommodation centers. So students that need accommodated testing, whether it's extended time or a reduced distraction environment or a screen reader technology, if you're a blind or low vision, that is our testing center that provides that. So think of it as a Prometric testing site, but for individuals with disabilities. We then have something called Academic Support and Access Partnerships, which is our team that provides executive functioning skill support and really supports our neurodivergent and neurodiverse students. And then we have the Adaptive Sports and Fitness Program, which is something that I founded here, which is providing equitable access to sports and fitness for individuals with and without disabilities. So those are the academic titles that I have. And then I've got a consulting company that I started my LLC. I'm about to be embarking on a venture capital sort of thing that we can talk about first quarter next year, that we can't discuss it as much right now yet, but that's something that's a exciting new venture. So the thing, however, that I feel as though helped me to get here was that I love so many things, right? I told you I played basketball, soccer, lacrosse, track, I sang, I danced, I acted. And so I've always been interested in lots of things. And that was something that could have looked like I was just as scattered in my life as I am in this podcast. But what helped me was that I ended up writing a mission statement. And I wrote a mission statement that said, this is what it is that I hope to do. And everything that I want to do from now on has to fit within that mission statement. And so it has to be sufficiently narrow so that you're not just saying yes to everything, but it has to be appropriately broad enough to encompass sort of the various aspects of who you are. Because I did not want to be pigeonholed as just the disability person, right? I didn't want to be pigeonholed as the diversity person. I didn't want to be pigeonholed as the Black person, right? And so I ended up saying that my goal was to provide equitable access to physical and emotional health and wellness for individuals with and without disability. So I wrote that in 2014, 2015. And every decision that I've made since then, I've looked at it and I said, how does this impact equitable access to physical and emotional health and wellness for individuals with and without disabilities? So it's not just the disability community that we are serving, right? And equitable access is a broad topic, right? And so that is what I did, because the second thing that I tell people has to fit into that mission statement. I tell people to find and follow your passions and make your passions your professions. And by doing that is where I now sit in this space where I feel as though I have the best job in the world, with the opportunity to interact with students across this institution and across multiple institutions. I have the opportunity to travel the world and give talks, trying to get people to see disability through a different lens. I have the opportunity to then teach the next generation of physicians who are going to then go off and be the ones taking care of my family, my loved ones, myself as I continue to age. And so I feel as though I've been blessed with this unique opportunity to be positioned at this intersection of multiple spaces where all of the experiences that I've had sort of contribute to the way that I'm able to then to teach, to provide access, to give jobs. And so that's something I just talked about earlier today, is that if you've never hired someone, right, I'm not going to say you can't feel this at all, but the way that you can feel when you give someone employment, right, when you realize that you are the one providing them with an opportunity to pay their bills, get health insurance, take care of their family, have a roof over their heads, like, that is something that I do not take for granted. It's something that I've seen plenty of people who you may think should be fine, but because of lots of things happening in their world that you don't know about, struggle in a way that most people don't talk about. And so the ability to then give employment is just, it's such a blessing. And so having a chance to have an office where we have now, we went from when I first started as an interim director here, there were 7 people in this work. And we now have over 27 professional staff with student staff and temporary staff as well. And every single time we make another hire, it feels like that's another piece of access given to someone who you don't know what access they would have gotten somewhere else. So the career is somewhat complex and busy at the moment. But as I said, I think to whom much is given, much is expected.
Oh, I love that journey and just all the advice that you provided. And, you know, I think it's interesting when you said, find your passions and then make your passions your profession. And I can just tell that that's certainly what you've done. You light up when you talk about your career. I know that you love the work that you're doing, and it's really hard to find that. It's really hard to do. And I get a lot of people come to me with this question because I have this podcast about finding your passion and making that your profession. And I know it's a privilege to be able to even do that, but I'm curious, how do people even start that process? Like, let's say you're talking to younger you or younger me, and we're working hard and whatever in our respective fields, and we're ambitious, but we haven't found that thing that lights us up yet, that passion. Do you have any advice for someone like that?
The first thing I'll say is, and I will borrow from your own language, there is no straight path. So I think that one thing that is reassuring to people is that if you feel as though you haven't found that thing that lights you up and you're 25, 35, 45, don't be discouraged, right? I mean, I know that there's some more practical things that people might want to make sure that they've got, you know, a job. But if you're in something that you still don't feel like is your passion yet, it's never too late, right? So that's the first thing, because I think people can get very discouraged because they feel as though they've already fallen off the track, and it's going to be way too hard to get onto that track. So I think giving people sort of the grace and the permission to say, even if you haven't found it, it's okay. But then what I say is try to shed all societal expectations and say, what do you like? What do you like? Because, you know, we talked about early, play all these sports. I mentioned that, right? Talked about what I saw my parents doing, using their mind and their hands and affecting change in people's lives. Those things could come together in lots of different ways, right? Like my son, he sees his father as a physician. He plays sports as well. He's also a musician. He wants to be a vet. He wants to be a vet and a professional baseball player, right? And the fact that he sees those two things as things that he can do, right? That he doesn't say, well, because I want to be a vet, I can't be an athlete. Or because I want to be an athlete, I can't be a vet. He doesn't think of it that way. And so when we get down to sort of the nitty gritty for people, of course, there'll have to be decisions that are made. But at this point of finding and following your passions, do not limit yourself. Don't limit yourself to what you think society expects that you have to do, because you can absolutely make a job out of something that has never existed, right? And if it's what you're passionate about, it is going to be easier for you to continue doing it. Now, I know that all the Nigerian parents listening to this podcast are going to say, of course, you have to be a doctor, lawyer, and engineer, and anything else. That's kind of the unspoken rule. You have to be a doctor or an engineer, maybe a lawyer. And that's because they all want us to be successful, and they know that those are paths that can lead to that. So I have sort of shifted in how I feel about it, because as a younger person, many of us felt as though our families were trying to push us towards something, right? And they didn't value sort of the arts and creativity and what other roles could still put food on the table. But I think that now what we are demonstrating is that it's intellectual curiosity that is what's going to put food on your table. And you can have a job that pays the bills but not be happy in life because you're actually not doing something that you're passionate about. So the way that I would talk to a young person is, one, I would reinforce that education is something that can't be taken from you. Now, does that education mean you have to get a PhD or a JD or an MD or a DO? Not necessarily, right? But the pursuit of information and the pursuit of academic excellence is something that will take you wherever it is you want to go. So that is the first step about knowing that. But then two, you just look at what is it that provides you joy? What do you enjoy doing? And then let's figure out what aspect of that we can then turn into a career. Because it doesn't mean that every single thing you enjoy doing is going to be able to be your career. And so I'm not just I'm not unrealistic about that aspect of it, right? But when you start with sort of the high level sort of conversation, I try to not put barriers. As I said, when we get to talking and after I have a couple of sessions with someone, we can get to the detail. But at first, release that burden you have of what's expected of you, right? And then truly say, what is it that you enjoy doing? And then we can go from there. I think too often people are, they're trying to get to the end before they even figure out where the starting line is, right? And then they're trying to then chart the direct path to get there. And I'll tell you, the direct path might be great, right? And I would love for you to be able to have a direct path. But what's more important is that you know there may not be a straight path, but as you're off of the track that other people think you should be on, they may not realize that that's actually going to be sort of a fast track to you getting to where you would have been. Because I've been told this by a mentor, and I also like rephrase their words. Someone who hasn't been where you're trying to go can't give you directions for how to get there.
Yeah.
And I just actually just made that one up on the spot. I'm going to try to say it again. I like it. Someone who hasn't been where you are trying to go cannot give you directions for how to get there. Now, they can teach you how to drive. They can tell you 10 and 2, follow the speed limit, you know, like, you know, only pass on the left side. Like they can still guide you. They can still give you advice. So I'm not saying you shouldn't listen to someone who hasn't done exactly what you want to do. But in terms of the exact steps for how to get there, they're only going to be able to take you as far as they went on that exact journey. And then if you start to go in a different direction, they might try to take you back to where they were, but that's because they want you to be successful and they think that where they've gone is where you want to go. If you want to go somewhere else, however, and even if you want to go to the same place that they went, it may not follow the exact same path. And they may not be able to then help you with that since they didn't take that same route. So that's the other part of it that I tell people is, I don't want you to look at my life and think this is how I will do it. Yeah. But I hope that you will look at my life and see that there are many ways that it can be done.
Yeah. No, I love that insight as well. And I've noticed now that I've entered this podcasting space, I'm starting to find the people that I want to be like. And I know my journey will still look different, but I think it's given me permission to have a multi-hyphenate career. You know, we think about multi-hyphenate careers in the context of entertainment, but I think as professionals, we can have multi-hyphenate careers as well. Because I realize, like, I love this podcast, I love storytelling, but I also enjoy corporate. I enjoy affecting change in corporate spaces. I think I can excel there. And so how do I do both? And I've been able to find people, and I know you're not necessarily in corporate, but I think you're also just a good example of someone who is a multi-hyphenate doing lots of different things, even though you come from a more traditional background. And so do I, being a doctor and a lawyer. But I think this generation, we're starting to think about possibility and think about success and think about career in a different way. And I'm curious about how you define success.
So I started off with the last one saying sort of shed what society expects of you, right? And I will continue along that thread because I'll get back to sort of the disability conversation and that community to give this answer. So I was a All-American triple jumper, right? So that's a very random, weird event, but it takes some coordination in your legs to be able to then do this hop, this step, and this jump. So I feel like it's actually somewhat ironic that it wasn't like I was a sprinter or, I mean, like I was this weird event that then the ability to not just walk or run or jump, but to kind of do all of them at the same time at full speed was odd. To be the person that now does not have full use of my legs, one could say that the way that I thought I was going to be successful is clearly not the way that I'm going to be able to be successful now, right? So I start with that to say that there are metrics for success that may change throughout your life. And so not looking at it from this ableist lens necessarily, but saying we all have the capacity for success. And even in the same individual, success might look different at various points in your life. And so if you then say that having impact in some way is what success is, right? If you then say impacting others' lives in a positive way is what success is, if you could say that providing access or opportunity for others is what success is. That is the lens through which I see it now. Because I know that for me, what I hope is that after I leave a room, I hope that I've left someone in that room better than they came in. Mm-hmm. And so I tell people that the past may not be your fault, but that the future will be. So what is it that you can do to make someone's tomorrow better than their yesterday? Now, because that's the way I define it, I may not always know if I'm being successful. Because if I go give a talk at UCSF, Department of Orthopedic Surgery, I don't know necessarily how many of those people are going to take the words that I shared and then go impact change elsewhere, right? So the other part of success that's important is you have to then have it for yourself. You have to define for yourself what that is going to be. And you also have to recognize the external world is going to then define it for you. And you can choose to accept that or not. So that's why I said that with respect to words of affirmation, I have been blessed with a lot of reinforcing words that say that I have been successful, right? It doesn't necessarily mean that I agree with what it is that people then say. Because, for example, there are times where people will then drop into, let's say, for example, they'll drop into a third world country, they'll do this pop-up clinic, they'll do amazing work for this week, and then they'll bounce, right? Mm-hmm. Someone may be like, that was so great of you, and look at what you did. That clinic was so successful, right? Now, I personally, and I'm not trying to knock on humanitarian work, but too often, what we do is we've just exposed a community to something that they're not going to be able to continue to have, right? Unless you then make an investment in going back there regularly, that might have done more harm than good. And so the external metric for success that other people put on you, you may be able to accept part of that. But for you, I want you to decide if I'm able to then have this conversation where I educate a community on something that I think they need to hear, that can be success, right? That opportunity has been provided, the access was given, the information was sort of disseminated. That is the way that I view it at this point, yeah. Right? Now, it is absolutely touching when someone comes back and repeats something that I said, or someone finds me and says, I heard you do XYZ, and then because of that, I was able to start this or do this or have this conversation. When you see a student that you taught that then comes back and is now one of your peers as a faculty member, right? So I think that success for me now, to be specific, is having the positive impact on the world that I hope to have. And that positive impact can be on the micro level, and it can be on the macro level, but I don't think that one is more important than the other. And so I tell people that you do what it is that you can do within your sphere of influence. And your sphere of influence might be your household. Your sphere of influence might be the street you live on. Your sphere of influence could be the city, the state, the nation, the world. And no one of those is better than the other. And they're all needed. And all of us have an opportunity to then impact those spheres of influence in some way. I'll borrow a phrase that one of my friends used. It was listed as an African proverb. And when you look it up online, it will say African proverb. I'm sure someone said this, but one of my colleagues used it in one of her presentations. And I've now promised that I will credit her every time I see it. So Dr. Ijoma Nodim. The saying is, if you think that you are too small to make a difference, then you've never spent the night with a mosquito. That is what I tell people now is, you don't know the impact that you could have. And no matter how small you are, whatever it is that you do could have a huge ripple effect, right? Now, too often people associate mosquitoes with spreading disease. So I don't want to then use this analogy as if it's like you're spreading disease, but just think about what little sort of impact some people may think that thing can make, but think about it from a positive standpoint of how that can spread, how that positivity can spread, and how you, in your little sphere of influence, can absolutely make a difference in other people's lives.
Yeah, Oh, another one. I love that insight as well, and thinking about the different spheres of influence and how no impact is too small. And I think that's true. And it's interesting because I certainly agree with that way of thinking, but I think sometimes it can be misconstrued because of this kind of podcast. I'm like humanizing success, and it's people with big brands who have done these interesting, cool things. But I also like to have my family members on. I talk a lot about my mom, who is a stay-at-home mother, and the huge impact that she's had on my life and her community and the church. And I bring my dad on, who was in nonprofit work. And so I certainly agree with that. And sometimes I get a little nervous about the message that I'm trying to share about success and impact because of the guests that I have on. But I think it's important to acknowledge that. You know, I struggle with that a little bit. So I appreciate you sharing that, because no one is better than anyone else. No one's impact is better than anyone else's. It's just that we have a platform due to privilege, and people like you are who are emphasizing that message is extremely important and valuable. The other thing that I like to talk about when it comes to just defining success for ourselves too is that it can be, part of it is career, but as I've gotten older, it is the impact that I have on family and friendships and all of the things outside of career. And so I'm curious about what brings you joy outside of work, because it's interesting. This conversation we've had has been the most, you know, intellectual, enlightening conversation we've ever had. I feel like we always have, you know, fun conversations when I knew you in college and you were this very gregarious person. You still are, you know, at parties and hanging out and very popular. Fermi was very popular, everyone at Stanford. So I'm curious about who you are outside of the work that you do and what lights you up in that way.
The interesting answer to that is going to sound like a cop-out, but I'll use my example. So my 12-year-old son, Alexander Oyedeji, he has had an opportunity to see his dad's life. He was born the day I graduated med school, so I did not have a disability at that time, but he was just born, right? So the majority of his life, he has known me to be in a wheelchair. Now, he has vague memories of when I wasn't, but that's, he was way too young to remember. I'm bringing him up, though, because the fact that my son sees disability now in a way that I didn't see disability when I was 12. So when he sees a wheelchair user in the community, one of the first, but there was a time where when he would see a wheelchair user, the first question he would have is, what sport do you play? Because all of the individuals that he has then had a chance to spend time with by being close to me have been Paralympians in wheelchair rugby, wheelchair tennis, wheelchair basketball. So he's seen these adaptive track and field athletes with, you know, prosthetic legs that are jumping high and winning gold medals. So he has seen a lot of the disability community, and he no longer, in his mind, sees disability as inability. So what brings me joy is the fact that as part of my job, and that's why I say it's a cop-out, we are embedding adaptive sports curriculum into the public schools of our community. But so now when I go around, there are kids in this community that know me as Xander, he goes by Xander now, as Xander's dad, right? But Xander's dad is that cool dad with the standing frame wheelchair or with the scooters that go really fast or that bring the sport chairs to our school so we can play wheelchair basketball together, right? And so it is about the time I get to spend with my son, right? And showing him a world that will hopefully be better for him tomorrow than it was for us yesterday. And so we go to his sporting events, right? So he plays travel baseball, travel soccer, he plays piano, he plays the drums. We just had a band concert last night, so getting a chance to be there. So I think that is the part that brings me joy, is spending time with my son and seeing the young man he is becoming through the things that we are able to then provide for him and the perspective that he is having. Because if I just did this work 9 to 5, Monday through Friday, and then I just shut it off Saturday and Sunday, and my son didn't see any of that, I wouldn't actually feel like I'm making the type of impact that I think we need to make. But the joy part of that is seeing who he is turning into because of the community that he has been raised in, because of the sort of perspective that he has been provided. That's probably the thing that brings the most joy. Now, of course, I like traveling all over the place. And so I travel to see friends and family. I don't find a lot of time for like watching TV much anymore, but I do get a chance to play some games with friends, like to nerd out a little bit. Settlers of Catan is something that I was introduced to in the past couple of years. And so just kind of relaxing and turning off the rest of the world and playing a board game with friends and family and going to my son's sporting events. Those are the things that bring me joy. But as I said, it's a cop-out because a big part of that is the access piece. And when I see people able to, you know, have access to live an active, healthy, fun life in whatever way they can, and I see individuals of all disability types and abilities doing that, that is my job, right? That is my job to provide that access to sort of be an advocate for the disability community. So it sounds like work, but to tie it all together, when you find and follow your passions and you make your passions your professions, it doesn't feel like work, right? And I know I need to do a better job of carving out vacation time. And if you ask my son, I do a much better job of that now than I did several years ago. And part of that is because I have reduced my clinical effort down to zero now. So I don't see patients in the office or in the hospital. I started talking about cradle to grave. I don't deliver babies anymore. I don't do C-sections anymore. I don't do inpatient work anymore. I don't do outpatient work anymore. But what I tell people is that every single one of us is someone's patient. And so while I might not seem like a traditional physician in the way that you see me in the office or in the hospital, in the operating room or in the emergency room, I still have work that then has a clinical impact on people's lives. I say I'm doing patient care every single day, just not in the traditional sense. So, but that removal of traditional patient care has given me more time to be able to be with my family, has given me more time to be able to be someone who can turn it off a little bit. And I'm trying to be better at that.
I appreciate that reflection. And, you know, and everyone is different too. So it is okay. You know, it's not necessarily a cop-out. It is okay to have your work be part of who you are, especially because it's such purpose-driven work. And I hope what I try to do with my message is show different people with different personalities, with different missions. And some people, it's like I'm a multi-hyphenate and I do a 9-to-5 that is great and it works well, but I do my passion work outside of that. Some people, it's like my work is my passion. And so that's going to infiltrate into the joy that you experience in your personal life. And it's okay to have both, you know, and the diversity of experience, I think, is important to highlight. And so I think sometimes our society, we do a little bit too much of the shoulds in every environment, and the should go to on this linear path, or entrepreneurs are like, you should go on this no straight path, but really you should do the things that are aligned with who you are and who you want to become. And so I love that you're doing that work. I just have loved this entire conversation. I usually end with final thoughts. So if you have any final thoughts that you want to leave with the listeners, please share.
First, I will thank you, Ashley, for the opportunity, because, you know, what you're doing is you are giving people a platform to be able to disseminate a message that there is no straight path. And so while I started by saying sort of shed whatever you think society believes, that's what you're doing by doing this, because by people hearing these different stories and allowing themselves to see that they may not have seen themselves in someone else that they see as successful, right? You know, I didn't talk about this on this, but I could have also talked about the fact that at one point in my career, I failed a high stakes exam. I failed one of the exams that you need to take to then get your medical license. That's not something that people often talk about, right? Mm-hmm. So I think I wanted to thank you for what you're doing, because that is, I think, a take-home point for this, because I'll be honest, right before we got on, so I'm closing on a home in 48 hours. My house is getting packed up right now. It's the end of the semester for school. My son got a concussion last week and then got sick yesterday. So there's a whole lot of, my mom just landed in Nigeria to go spend Christmas with my grandfather because it's the first year without his wife, who passed away earlier this year. So there are so many things happening in my life and world right now, not to mention what's happening in Gaza. And so I didn't even want to do this afternoon, right? I was ready and I was like, I have no desire to sit and talk for the next hour about this, I'll be honest. Yeah. But what you are doing and how you've done this has allowed me to kind of open up in a way that I did not realize that I needed. And what you're doing is giving other people an opportunity to then hear something that they may not even know that they needed, or to say something that they may not know that they would have said. So the takeaway point is, this type of thing is what all of your listeners could then do. By forgetting what society thinks you're supposed to do, by taking a chance and doing something that you're passionate about, right? You talked about the things and the different elements of your life that you were interested in, and that's one of the reasons why you did this. So for anyone, the take-home point is, don't limit yourself in terms of what it is that you think you can do. And it's a broken record in terms of finding and following your passions, but life is too short to stay on a path that you are not excited about. This is not telling people to quit their jobs today. And what I'm saying, if you think critically about what it is that you're doing, you ask yourself what it is that gives you joy, and you do whatever it is that you can do to try to then align those. That is, I think, what will make things better for each of us as individuals and each of us as a society, because there are too many things that are happening in our world right now that do not reflect anyone's ability to then live a life of joy. And I know it's easier said than done. And trust me, even within sort of the institution that I am, I know it's not easy to get the things done that you want to get done. But I know that at the core of every decision that needs to be made, there's a human being. And when we connect with human beings, when we recognize our shared humanity, when we see the fact that none of us is omnipotent, omnipotent, infallible, right? All of us will then fall short, right? My faith is the thing that drives me the most, right? So I don't beat people over the head with that, but it's important that that is something that's core to what I know and what I believe, and the opportunities I've had is based on the Lord's plan for me and His grace. So that's important. But then the practical, what do you do day to day about that, is just look across the camera, across the room, across the street. There's another person there. And what is it that we can do to make someone's tomorrow better than their yesterday? That is something that I think, whatever that means to you, whatever you're good at, whether you're a plumber, whether you're a musician, whether you're a physician or a lawyer, whether you are a caregiver in the home, no matter what your profession, whether it's paid or unpaid, you can make a difference in someone else's life. And not that you do things for what you get back from it, but I think that that can make you feel fulfilled, regardless of what society says about your success. If you are impacting other people's lives in some way, shape, or form by whatever it is that you do, then I think that's it. I will end with this, and this is not my own. There is a little boy that was found, and they've made a whole bunch of remixes about this now. But this little boy years ago was recorded saying, "Thank you for sunshine. Thank you for rain. Thank you for joy. Thank you for pain. It's a beautiful day." You heard that song yet?
I haven't.
You need to look it up. And okay, my voice is a little raspy right now, so I'm not going to sing it. Everyone's going to make fun of me because my voice is gone right now. But the little boy goes, "Thank you for sunshine. Thank you for rain. Thank you for joy. Thank you for pain. It's a beautiful day. It's a beautiful day."
Thank you for listening to another episode of No Straight Path, the highs, the lows, and the lessons learned. Remember to share the podcast with friends and family. And my hope is that these stories help you navigate your No Straight Path journey. If this content is adding value to your life, and I hope it is, please take a few minutes out of your day to rate the show and write a review. You can click the link in the show notes to write a review. It helps other listeners find the show, and I just really appreciate it. Have a lovely week, embrace the journey, and remember, you're not alone.